Exactly, yay. Welcome, Megan Monahan. We've just been talking about your surname. To Spiritual Mixtape, the podcast. I'm Daisy Mack. This is such a treat for me to have you on here.
I'm so excited.
So I have been a fangirl of you. I know I've sort of admitted this. So for everybody listening, we have a mutual, she's one of your best friends. She's one of my incredible friends. And I'd also call her a mentor. I think she's just such an example of what a woman should be in the world and how you show up for your friends.
Yeah.
I'm always very humbled by our mutual friend, Elizabeth.
Yeah. And she's such a good... shout out to her, and also like universal concept that everyone can connect to. I think she's like the perfect example of what it looks like to know what your purpose is and to be in constant expression of that and to nourish other people with that and the world with that and also receive nourishment by being in that space.
So it's put into context. We're obviously both in wellness and spirituality. And I love what you've just said about Elizabeth being in her purpose, because she's in fashion.
Yeah.
But so it's a completely different genre, industry, but she does lead with complete heart. Mm-hmm. And all I've seen in the, it must be about 10 years now, it's coming on to 10 years that I've known her, is her move from a place of complete integrity.
Yeah.
And living in complete alignment. And you're right, even though we're completely different industries, I look to her as an example.
Yeah, well, because, you know, purpose and like dharma, the expression of it can change. You know, I always reflect to her that her purpose is to see someone's like complete zone of genius and to support them in helping them shine their magic. And you can do that in an Uber ride. You can do that when you work in fashion. You can do that if you work in music. You can do that if you work in wellness, right? So I think the thing with purpose that we get so, I think, confused about is that we try to identify what the job is going to be, what the expression of it is going to be, and we don't spend enough time remembering who we are. And then from that place of remembrance, asking, okay, wow, like how can I show up now in the world so that other people can benefit from that thing that I do? So, you know, I always say to myself, I want to help people remember who they are. I want to hold space for people to like see and remember who they are. And I can do that over coffee or leading a meditation or writing a book, you know, like, so I think, I don't know, she, shout out to Elizabeth. She's just such a great example of that.
Oh, I mean, I feel like we have a whole 8 different podcasts from Dharma.
Part one.
Yeah. Embodying your
purpose.
Welcome
to part one of our 27-part series.
It would be my absolute delight, because I was fangirling you. So when Elizabeth and I worked together pre all of this, when I was still in the music industry, and we have a kind of twinning storyline here, because you came from the music industry too. I would train at Wanderlust here in LA, which is a yoga studio. I'm sure tons of people, if you're even just mildly into yoga.
Yeah.
And meditation, you follow Wanderlust, and you were the meditation director there. So I was in your orbit, but we hadn't met. And your book came out 2019.
Yeah, 2019. Yeah.
And do you want to just, I kind of don't even know where to start, because your origin story is amazing. The book is amazing. I feel like maybe we start with the book and work backwards and then come back into the present day. So the book is literally over there. Don't hate, meditate.
That's so sweet.
It's such a great name.
It wasn't my name. Just full disclosure, my publisher changed the name. I wanted to call it, what did I want to call it? I had a totally different name pitched. And they're like, what about this? And I was like, okay. Oh. So I can't take credit for the name, but yes.
But it works.
It works.
It works. And it's half tradition, half your invaluable zeitgeist pop culture words coming through. So it feels very relatable and easy to digest.
Yeah.
Which for a meditation book, especially in 2019, like I feel like we've gone through a big cultural shift.
Yeah.
and people just fundamentally understand meditation
so much more than they did. Yeah. And there's so many, you know, the real intention that I had for this book, because there are so many amazing books from spiritual thought leaders that are very rooted in like those esoteric teachings, which is great. And there's so much depth to that. And then there's a whole host of modern spirituality that's very like one-liner, Instagram, like here's a quote and here's like a short, you know, Instagram comment about it. And I think it's really important that there's something that bridges both of those things. It's fine to have like a one-liner moment if it's like rooted in something deep. And it's fine to have something deep if you actually understand what it's saying and are getting nourishment from that. So I really wanted to create something that gave you access to like the depth, but also in just painfully relatable ways that you could see in your life. Because I think unless you can see the opportunity to shift in your every day, it becomes really hard to kind of land in those practices.
You know? You have to feel it.
Yeah.
And like understand it on a personal level.
Yeah. And see like, well, why does this matter to me?
I feel like that is an amazing way to, because I know your story now. Like,
yeah,
that is exactly how you ended up in Deepak Chopra's camp. And like the book, he wrote your foreword, which you really in this world couldn't get a better co-sign. But he was actually your boss. But you came from the music industry.
Yeah.
And you were feeling all of these things and you just basically went and changed your life.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about how that happened and what your journey was.
It's been so many just leaps of total faith into uncertainty. And it's easier to do it when you're younger, which I did for the first time when I was younger. And it's easier to do it when you don't know how big of a deal it is, kind of what you're doing, which is what is so lovely about being young. Like you just don't have as much context and you don't realize how uncertain things are and like what the kind of stakes are. But yeah, I found meditation because I was physically breaking down, you know, from, and I always say this to people, most of us don't find meditation because, or any sort of deep work because everything is going great.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's really important to recognize that when you're in pain, whether it's emotional pain or financial pain or physical pain, or when there is a pain point in your life, it's an access point to shift and transformation. Nobody on the best day of their life is like, oh, let me stop and just reflect on who I am and where I'm not in integrity and where I could be doing better. When you're enjoying a moment, you enjoy the moment because it feels good. So when those moments come where it's uncomfortable or painful or excruciating, like wherever you are on that spectrum, it's an opportunity to like lean in and say, okay, like where is there work for me to do? Because clearly something's not working. And so I found that because my body lovingly like sucker punched me and was like, this is not working. I had to get my gallbladder taken out from gallstones from stress. When I was in my early 20s, I started having a lot of kind of chronic symptoms like hives and things like that that weren't going away. And when I was getting presented with a lot of the Western modalities to treat it, which were predominantly like, here's a Xanax, I just started to think, I don't feel overly anxious. I've never had an issue like this before. It doesn't really feel resonant for me to just start taking things to kind of cover up whatever's happening. I did have that little bit of knowingness. And so I, on the advice of my therapist, started looking up meditation. And that was not at all a thing in 2009. You know, what we have now in the world in terms of wellness is so much more robust than what existed in 2009. And Deepak Chopra existed in 2009 and his wellness center. And that's where I ended up going. And I kind of went down and dipped my toe in for a day and learned a tiny, tiny bit about what it means to have a mind-body connection and what it means to have an integrative approach to medicine.
Women in their 20s, when we were like, you know, 2009, I did not have a mind-body connection.
I didn't.
I lived from my eyes up, and my body was something that I wanted to look good in clothes.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there was no part of me that had an awareness of that. And I went down for a day to the Chopra Center and had a medical consultation with an integrative Western medical doctor. So I was like, okay, this is still like very legitimate. But the doctor was saying things like, take some coconut oil, rub it on your hives, and talk to your body. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. She was like, talk to your hives and tell your body. I'll never forget it. You know, I hear you. Like, thank you for letting me know that something is off. I'm working on it. Like, we're going to get through this. Like, have compassion for the symptom instead of anger for the symptom. And I'll never forget, I came out of that medical consultation. I took like a free intro to meditation class that they had going on. And then I sat and had lunch. And I vividly remember it. Well, it was a spinach salmon salad, which was delightful. But I also vividly remember being there and thinking to myself, I think I can heal here. And really what here meant was in this different conversation with myself and with my body and with these teachings. And that very quickly led to a 1-week Panchakarma retreat being put on a credit card. And that led to a couple months later doing a really immersive 3-day workshop around letting go of undigested emotion.
Yeah, I definitely want to spend some time talking about that.
And like somatic work. And that very quickly, maybe not very quickly, but a year and a half later led to me quitting my job. So lots of like following a voice that didn't necessarily on paper seem rational.
No, not at all, especially then.
But very much.
You felt your body.
It was, I felt very like guided. I felt very internally guided instead of being externally directed. And that's been such a guiding light for me.
Oh, I feel you.
Yeah.
I feel you because when you start to feel your body, you just can't ignore it anymore, no matter what the markers are for what success should look like. I definitely got myself into, everybody who's listening to this knows about the pickle I got myself into and the burnout that I experienced because I just kept following the external.
Yeah.
Markers despite ignoring all of the intuition. Yeah. And I always thought my intuition was switched off because the burnout and the trauma was was running the show. But actually it was on, and it was even more nurturing.
Mm-hmm.
But because I was fully connected to my eyes up, I just didn't move.
Yeah.
But I really love, and I know that this was something we were talking about before the podcast, like it was half the reason why we wanted to do an episode together. We were talking about undigested anger.
Yeah.
And the fact that you are always looking for it. Now, a lot of the people who listen to the podcast have chronic conditions. Mm. They're healing from cancer.
Yeah.
They've got chronic fatigue syndrome.
Yeah.
Like me, they have psoriasis. They have an inflammatory response to stress, basically. And it's manifested in some people in small ways and in others in more significant ways, like you were saying about having your gallbladder removed. But people don't look for the undigested anger. And I'd say my biggest motivation for doing this was my dad's cancer.
Mm-hmm.
He had lung cancer, and I think he hit his 70s, and he had a very rocky childhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when he couldn't keep going, like when he knew that some of those dreams that kept him alive, that kept him not focusing on the anger and kept him like moving forward with all of this wonderful optimism that he always had for life.
Yeah.
When he began to understand that he couldn't chase those, well, those dreams were going to be harder, or that he would need to adjust the dreams, and anger started to really well in him.
Yeah.
And that's what caused the cancer. Mm-hmm. So you bringing that up to me is so meaningful on lots of levels. I know I've kind of guided you into that, but do you want to share your thoughts on?
Yeah. You know, I think it's important to acknowledge that there's no end to this work.
Oh.
And I did a lot of work around undigested emotion, mostly relating to my dad. And a big, really primary activator of those hives, likely. And that whole phase was my dad getting a prognosis that you have a year to live. And that was directly related to his alcoholism and his active alcoholism and the implications that that was having on his body. And he ended up living longer than a year. But that was really, like, hearing that news was such a, I mean, not that it was a surprise. It wasn't like, oh, really? Like, drinking's bad and it can be bad for your health. But hearing something is like finite, is like you have a year to live, all of a sudden just really awakened a lot of dormant feelings that I had had. And the thing is that's so tricky is that when you're a child, if you don't have the ability to change your circumstance, if you can't like create a boundary or move out or create space, or if for whatever reason you don't have an opportunity to express those feelings in real time, which is so often the case when you grow up with, you know, addiction, alcoholism, that ends up being a lot of times like the thing that needs the most attention in the home, in the moment, it can just be really easy to say, oh, wow, it's easier if I just swallow this. Like that makes everything better because there's a lot going on sometimes. And that was a really powerful thing. And I did a lot of work around that and forgave and opened my heart and all these things. But what I think is really powerful to remember again is that you get to keep leaning into and being really dedicated to your own liberation, like every single day. And what I'm really clear on is that I kind of unconsciously, I think, avoided circumstances where I would have to be in a situation to continue to do that work. And I think I really, and I'm and mostly that showed up for me in like romantic partnership. And so it's not at all surprising to me that I wasn't in a very serious relationship for a while there.
Yeah.
Because that would have required me to be, and I come from a lot of codependency, which we've connected to, and that's such another very sort of seductive way to abandon yourself and not acknowledge your truth and your feelings and your anger. And so looking back, because hindsight is just blissfully 2020, is I think I really did a lot of work and then stopped putting myself in situations where I would have to continue to do the work in that area.
Yep.
And so I was in relationships that didn't require very much of me, that I didn't have to be super kind of honest about my feelings or, right, relationships that aren't serious, that aren't true partnerships. It's really easy to not do that. And I had a real wake-up call when I got into a relationship at the beginning of the pandemic, and I realized, oh, wow, I'm having a hard time like using my voice sometimes or like saying how I feel. And I'm really feeling like that codependent sort of tug to swallow a moment of anger when I really needed to like shake it out maybe, or journal, or like use any of these amazing practices. And so my second wake up call was getting another physical manifestation of the repercussions of not just those last 4 years, but of kind of putting the ball down in doing that work. And I was diagnosed with MS in August of last year. And that has been another just complete catalyst for transformation and shift and honesty within myself to say, wow, okay, like to your point, when you have like a chronic inflammatory response, it's, or, you know, an autoimmune response especially, it's friendly fire. It's your body seeing a threat when there isn't a threat. It's attacking cells that aren't actually there to harm you. And so I just think it's so powerful to continue to lean into what are you holding on to that you can be brave enough to acknowledge and then release. And a lot of times, I think, especially for women, what gets swallowed can be anger.
100%.
Or rage, or like these very primal feelings. I think it's really prevalent for women. I think it's obviously super prevalent if you have any kind of people-pleasing codependency patterns that so many of us do.
Oh my God, I just feel so tearful. Thank you so much for sharing with us your story and coming full circle, because it's a big diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
And admitting to yourself on any level that you were part of the reason that you're here, I think most people spend their life in denial.
Yeah.
And it's probably the beginning of the healing part that you are in control of.
Yeah.
To take ownership.
Yeah. Well, it's like listening to, you know, you and your body are not like, you're on the same team. So it's really looking at like, where have I not been the best teammate to my body?
How has that felt for you?
I mean, it's heartbreaking. You know, it's like some real like dark night of the soul shit when you have to sit with the ways in which you have abandoned yourself, the ways in which you haven't been brave enough or strong enough to like be with a feeling that's uncomfortable, ways that you've numbed it, ways that you've just avoided having to be in a situation that would have activated something. But I always find so much more empowerment when I lean into what I can put energy into, which is almost none of the time some external thing that's out of my control, right? So the thing that I can control is like how honest am I being with myself? How loving am I being with myself? How brave am I being with myself? Instead of doing what's so much easier and so much more tempting to do, which is like, what can I move around out here?
So how do you do the work? Like you personally, or what you would tell a friend or a client, like how would you do the work? How do you show up for yourself?
Yeah. I mean, meditation, not surprisingly, is like a non-negotiable. But I think it's also, I've done a lot of work in the last 4 years practicing my ability to feel safe in my body, even when I'm wildly uncomfortable. That's like where my like reps have been the last like 4 years, 4 or 5 years. How can I be, and how can I cultivate equanimity and like a safe grounding space within myself, even when I'm in an uncomfortable conversation that's bringing up a lot of stuff, even when my mind goes somewhere that feels really scary, like even when, how can I feel comfortable being uncomfortable and recognizing that just because it's uncomfortable doesn't mean it's not safe.
Oh, that's a big one.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
Yeah. And when you start to like come up against, so, you know, as I said, I had a real kind of, I don't want to say relapse and be like that dramatic, but kind of re-entry into my like codependent stuff. And that showed up in my relation, my romantic relationship. And when you bump up against a pattern that you've done a lot of work on that you haven't necessarily been in relationship with in a while,
yeah,
all of a sudden, the simplest things can just feel so hard and so uncomfortable. Putting up a boundary, saying no, saying yes, like all these things that we intellectually know are how we do the things well, it can be so hard. So whatever your individual pattern is that you're working through, whatever your karma is, like whatever it is, because we all have our stuff, recognize that if you are continuing to grow and move yourself into unknown spaces and you're not just on autopilot, and that's what, you know, I really recognized I was, and how I was kind of bullshitting myself, is that I really for such a long time like wasn't opening space for a deeper partnership, you know, element in my life, because that would have required all of this stuff. It would have required like bravery and like massive honesty and all these things that I think, I, you know, I'm realizing now require more of me. And I think it's so easy to not want to do those things because we realize it feels like work. It's picking up a heavier weight. But if you can continue to like really bravely move into those spaces, you will get stronger.
Yeah,
and your muscles will get stronger.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's called resistance training. It's not called like effortless flow training.
Oh.
It's called resistance training because when you can hold that resistance and practice being strong amidst that resistance, it does start to get easier to like be honest, to show up, to say the thing, to put up the boundary.
What do you say to people who want to do that but feel really broken in the situation that they're holding?
Yeah.
Say they've just had the diagnosis, they've had a loved one, a parent get a diagnosis. I don't want to just do diagnosis, like trying to think of other situations where people get really, maybe divorce.
Yeah, you got fired, you got divorced, you're bankrupt for some reason. You know, like we get life diagnoses all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really a moment where the thing that has always been out of your control is just glaringly out of control and has changed state without your consent, right? And I think it's really important, and certainly what I recognized when I was in real time getting diagnosed and like sitting in an ER, I realized that all these muscles that I've been building for 15 years showed up. Like all this resistance training that I've been doing for 15 years in all these areas, even though I was given this huge weight, I was like, oh, I can like, this is a heavy weight, but like I can lift this weight. And I think the biggest muscles, the biggest mindsets for me in that moment were presence times a million. Like the ability to rest in the present moment, even if it feels really A, B, and C, really scary, really sad. Like your ability to hold space and be a container for your ebbing and flowing emotions, but to be really present with them, which means not holding on to them once they kind of have their moment and not anticipating a future moment. Yeah. I think that combined with crazy amounts of acceptance of this moment and not arguing with the reality that you're in right now. And it doesn't mean you have to like what's happening. I certainly wasn't like, oh my God, fantastic news. But once you can accept it, it creates space for possibility. And in that space, you know, I always say when nothing is certain, anything is possible.
Oh, that is a beautiful reframe.
When nothing is certain, which like nothing is, anything can be. And in that way, sitting there and getting this diagnosis felt like such an injection of like hope and possibility. And in that way, from that context, I sat there thinking to myself, like, maybe this is like the greatest thing that will ever happen to me. You know, certainly like certainly my dad dying is not something I enjoyed or something I wanted. And I can also really honestly sit here and say that the things that I love the most about myself, the things that I'm the most proud of, the parts of my life that I cherish have all come from the version of me that kind of was revealed on the other side of moving through that.
Mm.
And so it doesn't mean it can't hurt. It doesn't mean it feels good all the time, and it doesn't mean you have to like it. But there's also this ever-present opportunity to ask yourself, how am I going to grow? Like, how am I going to become like a superhero on the other side of this? Like, how are the parts of me that are being tested going to become like bulletproof on the other side of this? And with that comes like a lot of like strength and worth and love.
It was incredibly empowered self-talk.
Mm-hmm.
Like but beautifully, this is why I like your book, because mm-hmm. it'd be like, how do you become your own superhero?
Yeah.
Because people who are new into the journey or are trying to figure it out, and you throw words like transformation and empowered around, like it doesn't always land.
Yeah.
But then when you say it so beautifully of like, how am I going to make this shitty thing my superpower?
Yeah. And I think a lot of that has to do with, are you connected to what purpose and what dharma really is?
Oh, I love this.
We're landing the plane. Because really, you know, thanks, Elizabeth, for sponsoring this episode. When you think about purpose and dharma, it's really from like a Vedic philosophy perspective. It's really this twofold path. Most people think like, what's your dharma? What's your purpose? And we immediately go to, you know, how am I going to show up in the world? What am I going to do? And really, the first part of dharma is discovering who you are.
So just like, let's just dial it back. Because I understand what dharma is on a spiritual level, but not everyone who's, I would say that most people who come into the podcast are on like the first part of their healing journey.
Yeah.
Explain to them in your words. So that people know, when you're doing yoga and you like
dharma is like thrown out.
Yeah. All like the time. It's themes for classes. Yep. It's on like everybody's like Instagrams.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And everyone has a connection moment with dharma at first. And it is about purpose. But what would you say in your beautiful way of making complicated things easy to understand? Explain to about what dharma is.
Yeah. Before you ask yourself any of the like, what do I want to do and how am I going to like serve the world? The first part of dharma is you being in service of yourself and doing the work to remember who you are and connect with like the deepest, truest essence of yourself. And I think, and then from that place, okay, wow, how can I now help others to do the same thing? And how can I use my unique amalgamation of qualities to be that in the world? And I think people get stuck on either of those two things. You know, there's a certain level of kind of like self-referred focus in spirituality sometimes, where I'm like working on my best self and like just living my best life. And that's really the first part of dharma, is connecting with who you are and like doing the work to like let go of who you are not, to like scrub away the residue, to like reset the programming, right? And you can get stuck there. And I think a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And I think modern wellness makes that really easy because it's now such a business. So you can just keep doing your work for the rest of your life and have that be the focus. I think alternatively, a lot of people also just bypass their own work and look for, what am I going to do out here, and call that dharma or purpose. And like the beautiful epic combination is when you're doing both of those things.
Yeah.
It's like you're in this conversation with yourself, which, oh, by the way, is always continuing, right? It's never like, oh, I knew who I am now. Great. Now I'll just, right, to my lovely point, it's really natural to like fall into old patterns, to be confronted with new things that allow you to like excavate a deeper layer of yourself. And once you have done some of that work, then you can start to ask, okay, wow, how can I be of service now? How can I share with the world in my unique way so that it will be of service to others, remembering who they are, finding their magic, like living in their purpose, right? It's not just like one or the other.
So what I love that you have available, and it's super affordable, is your 21-day meditation guide, because I think it does ground into both of those elements. You're half doing the work, but you're completely present. And tell people about like why that offering is important to your dharma.
Yeah, I really... So that came about, that 21-day series came about during the pandemic, when I really saw and felt internally that desire to just like get into that reactive stress response of like, I need to survive, I need to be alive. And some of that, which is why it was so tricky, is that when you are faced with things that are very threatening to your life, right, there are times when that feels really necessary, and it might be. And I think it's in those times, especially if those times can be somewhat chronic, which they were, especially if you lived in Los Angeles. It felt like we had the pandemic for 17 years here. I think it's really powerful to be able to shift yourself from that place of just trying to like survive and being reactive to, okay, how am I going to consciously respond? How am I going to stay in a place of possibility? How am I going to stay in a place of trust, of acceptance, of presence, all of those things? And so that's why I created 21 days of those meditations, really to take you through a state of surviving to one of thriving, to one of possibility, to one of trust in the uncertainty. And so every meditation has a short little like talk at the beginning, and then there's like that theme woven into the meditation. I priced it the way that I did because I wanted anyone to be able to use it. And it's stayed alive because a lot of people need to use it and get benefit from having, and especially kind of having, the beauty of having a spiritual teacher is that it's really nice to have someone like walking alongside of you as you're doing your work. As you know, when you hold space for someone to do work, even if you're facilitating a process that they're moving through, you're always just holding space.
Yeah.
You're sharing wisdom, maybe you're sharing insights, you're sharing reflections, but really what you're doing is just holding a really safe container for someone to lean in to themselves a little bit more.
I think we'll definitely link the meditation, the 21 days, into the show notes. But I think like the final point I'd just love to touch on, which we've sort of been running through, but haven't put it until you brought it up just then, is this idea of meditation in your practice taking you out of survival mode and taking you from that fight or flight into feeling safe in your body.
Yeah.
As someone who's done the work their whole life, had a meditation practice, I still ended up with PTSD because my body didn't feel safe to me. And I think that's such a beautiful, I mean, there's been so many nuggets. I knew that when I watch this back, I'm going to be like, wow, there's another one. There's another moment. There's another social clip. But in terms of a healing journey and your journey and mine too, and I just think of like some of my regular listeners, how deep and impactful it is to hear that the work is never done.
It's so annoying. It's so annoying, but it's never done. I wish I had better news. I wish I had better news for everyone. It's just never done. But that's like the beauty. When the goal stops being, let me define everything and get everything comfortable and then I can relax.
Yeah.
When that stops being the goal and the goal becomes, wow, let me get really comfortable with things being messy and unknown. Let's get really comfortable with like uncomfortable feelings.
100%.
Let's get really comfortable saying the thing that feels scary to say. You know, when the goal stops being to get comfortable, you can really enjoy uncertainty and whatever might come up in that moment of this presence and your authentic like self.
Well, that is the most perfect way to end it. I love coming back to the authentic self as the rounding. And you have been an amazing guest. And I'm having little moments here of remembering seeing you around at Wanderlust and being like, wow, I can't believe. Well, I can completely believe.
You're
but
so
how
funny.
Special to be here talking to you and sharing this space with you. I know that the people listening are going to find so much validation and wealth in what you've said. And I don't think you can underestimate how much sharing your story and your health journey is going to like really touch people's hearts. So thank you for being brave enough to use your voice and share those words and facilitate healing in a different space, in a different way.
Yeah, thanks, love. I'm really happy to share. And I think it's part of how I see like my purpose, you know? It's like navigating through this in a personal way means that I get to share different things in a different way so that maybe others can take any of what resonates. So my pleasure.
Well, on that note, Megan, I hope that you come back. I'm definitely going to ask you again.
Let's do part 8, 9, 10, 27, 28. I'm into it.
I'm so happy to hear that. Definitely check the show notes and download Megan's 21 Days of Meditation and feel that authentic voice. Until next time, see you on the other side. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope that this episode has left you feeling inspired and a little bit more seen. Your life, after all, is a mixtape. And once you learn to play the tracks you want to hear and adjust that volume, you will have the soundtrack of your dreams. To stay connected and continue exploring the mixtape together, you can follow me on Instagram at Spiritual Mixtape. But also, if you have any thoughts for me, any questions or any ideas that you want to share, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me at hello@spiritualmixtape.com. So until then, my friends, let your inner anthem guide your path.